This is News from the Peak. I'm Joe Mamlin. Joining us on the show today is David Kilgore. David serves as the director of the California Department of Child Support Services. At a recent Western Intergovernmental Child Support Conference, David participated in a session called The World Cafe. At this session, the audience could choose various tables around the room where a discussion leader would talk to them about an innovative or sometimes controversial topic related to the child support program. David led a table discussing something he's been working on in California for quite a while, and that is enhancing self-service options for people that we serve. Of course, this leads to all kinds of other issues, like public awareness of the program, how to address the needs of the families in the context of what's required, underlying issues of technology and access, and the list goes on. But in the end, it's really about how this might lead to a more effective and more successful program that addresses the needs of our families. As Maureen and David discuss this topic, they'll refer to a graphic created during the session. You can see this graphic on our website along with a short article about the topic and about this episode. So on today's show, we dig a little deeper into the subject of self-service and explore some really interesting ideas. The program is evolving, and this is just one more way that we can more effectively meet the changing needs of the families that we serve. It's going to be a great show, so stick around, and we'll be right back.
Well, thank you for being on the podcast. It was kind of like the crowds were demanding it after Outreach World Cafe, David. So, I'm just trying to give the crowd what they want. So thanks for being on.
Yeah, so that was a fun experience. And it's one of my kind of personal interest topics in the child support program right now. So it was nice to get other people's thoughts and just see their kind of eyes open to what might be out there for the child support program in the future. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, and one thing that I've always appreciated about you is amongst a lot of things, one thing I've always appreciated is that, and tell me if my perception's wrong, but I don't feel like you ever shy away from controversy, which I love. I love disruptors.
Well, I think the controversy is how the sausage is made in child support. It takes a lot of controversy and a lot of debate and a lot of kind of sometimes even heated conversations about a topic to get the best product at the end of the day. And so that's what it takes to get something really changed in child support is the discussion, is the controversy, is the debate.
Yeah. And I always appreciate that. And I feel like sometimes people shy away from it because it infers conflict, and that conflict can be healthy and thinking about things from different perspectives. And I really appreciate that. And I feel like I only kind of like popped by the Outreach Cafe table that you were running. And but I felt like people were really getting into the topic. And so maybe we could just start with kind of the experience of Outreach Cafe and just maybe a little description of what kind of transpired at your table, if you would.
Yeah, well, Outreach Cafe was half a dozen or more of tables with just a topic on them for each table to discuss. And then two or three times we rotated tables to have other people come in, look at the ideas that were already on the board, and then add more ideas to it. The table that I was at was self-service. And I think what was interesting was watching people's kind of light bulb click from the difference of, okay, I self-served and I filled out this form on my own and sent it in, to what we were really talking about this on, which was, how can I genuinely take control of my own child support case, be my own case manager, and predominantly manage my case with the assistance of the child support program as I need it along the way, which is kind of fundamentally changing the perspective of how we might be able to deliver child support differently in the future. So I really enjoyed this conversation. It's consumed a lot of our time in California, and I think many other states are hip deep in this as well, just trying to think about, how can we be more efficient? How can we be more successful? How can we create a program that people would genuinely appreciate engaging in, instead of kind of being forced to join the child support program, as has been the case in the past?
Yeah. And so I want to like dig in a little bit on that word control, because I think that's where people might get a little bit hung up, is like, so when you say folks having control, can you like describe a little bit more about like why that's important? Because I feel like that's kind of the, I mean, that for me feels like a little bit of the crux of this model, or thinking outside of the box on traditional case management.
Sure. For the most part, in most states, and for most of our activities, once you sign on the dotted line that you want child support assistance with your case, or sometimes you're not even signing, you're signing at the social services office that you need financial aid over there, and they're and to get that, you're signing a piece of paper that says a referral is going to come over the child support program. And as soon as the child support program gets it, we open up the case, and we have, at that point, from that point on, ultimate authority on how your case is going to be managed from that point on. We dictate all the actions. Automated actions occur in our systems all the time. We decide if we're going to take a driver's license or not, or intercept funds or not, or we're going to, all of those things are on our time schedule and based off of our own perception of what should happen in the child support program. And what we're talking about here is saying, no, maybe it needs to be more flexible and more adaptive in the child support program, and give kind of the authority to our participants to decide how they want their child support case to be run in the program. And we then, as a program, can just say, well, your case qualifies for the following actions. Do you want me to take these actions or not? And the receiving parent can say, no, I realize he just lost his job. I don't want you to take his driver's license away and do these other things. I think he's working on turning this around. Let's not do these things, because we don't want to be the wedge that makes the family separate even more. I would rather see us be the entity that is helping these two parents navigate a difficult situation, a co-parenting kind of arrangement, and be the tool that helps them be successful in that, instead of the wedge that breaks it apart.
Yeah.
And that means we have to hand over kind of our authority and our autonomy on these cases to our participants, much like the banking industry has done, right? They just, here's an app. Don't come into our office anymore. Take care of everything. And if you need help, give us a call. Or TurboTax, same thing.
Yeah. Well, one thing that you've said that I've kind of like resonates with me is, when we used to, so when I first started in child support as 40 attorney, we did a lot of contempts, and, you know, there was such a conflict of sometimes what the caseworkers were wanting, which was like full enforcement, like no mercy. And then you would get to court and you would hear these like really terrible situations, and you're like, yes, I mean, we have the authority to fully prosecute, ask for jail or ask for, you know, probation or all these hefty, you know, fines and stuff. But really, when you were like eyeball to eyeball with someone, they're just another human being who's like, you know, struggling with a whole bunch of things, of which child support was one of them. So having that, you know, control to say that a custodial parent may say, you know, the relationship the father has with my child and parenting time, and like not having a child see their parent have to go to jail or something, is more more important than potentially us reaching a statistic that month.
I absolutely agree. I there will always be a certain population of people who says, no, I don't really want anything to do with that other person. I just want child support to handle this for me. Do what you guys do, and let me know if you need anything from me. And in that situation, what we've already got kind of the right structure. We already know how to do that. We already can handle the request of those types of parents that want us to fully take over and handle their case. I just think there's a whole host of other people out there that want flexibility, want options, and they want more control of their own case. And they don't come to us because they're not ready to relinquish and completely hand that over. So if the point of our program is to really provide our services and help out as many people as we can, we need to meet all of those people in all the different ways that they want their case handled. That requires us to be extremely flexible in the way that we deliver services.
And so is it the flexibility, like butting up against how we typically kind of measure our performance and how we are funded and like all of that? Is that kind of like, what is the resistance to being more flexible as a program, do you think?
Some of the resistance is federal requirements, some of it's state requirements, and some of it's child support policies that we've just put into place, and we just have not revisited them in a really long time. There's actually, I think, more flexibility that we could potentially utilize, but it just requires the process of changing a policy, a state law, or a federal law to have that occur. I know in California, our experience has been we just need to evaluate each of our enforcement tools and see if we're overutilizing them. We saw that with our levy process. We're seeing it with other processes. And so it just kind of makes you think, well, if a person came in and said, I don't want you to do an enforcement, I really just want you to keep track of the payments so that we have a neutral third party that is doing the bookkeeping for us. If that's what they came and asked us to do, would we be allowed to do that? No. We're required to do an IWO. We're required to do federal intercepts. Or those things are kind of required at kind of the federal level. There's things that are required at the state level, depending on your state, it's greater or lesser. But in general, that's just not an option. We call those cases non-4D cases. I have to process all the payments through the SDU, but I don't get credit for those cases. And I don't get the collections on those cases. But that's a substantial amount of cases of money that I still keep track of and I still have to manage in my system that I don't get credit for from a federal performance measure or a standard there. And then there are cases where we need more than just, we need more enforcement than just tracking the payments. If he does have a federal tax payback, or if he wins the lottery, or if he sells a house, I would like chunks of money from those, but I don't want you to do the driver's license and a few of those other small things. Can they do that in your state or not? Are you flexible enough to be able to give them that option? It's just looking at those types of things and saying, are we positioned to be able to meet them where they want us to be or not?
And that's a good question. One of the questions I have for you, because I was hoping to get over to the table to hear more about it, but are there things that California has been able to use or to have increased flexibility by just kind of revisiting some of those more internal policies?
Definitely. We're in the process of analyzing each of these. We've drastically reduced levies by like 98%. We hardly do any levies anymore, although we collect the same amount of money as when we collected, when we sent out 50 to 60,000 levies a month. Now we only send out 2,000 levies, but we get the same amount of money as the 50 to 60. And we're just not imposing the $150 fee on the banks for people that we can't collect from. Income withholding order. We kind of have to do income withholding orders because that's a federal requirement, but you can add to your child support orders a stipulation that says that the person can pay by a bank withdrawal so long as the payments come in. And if they don't, then the income withholding order goes out. So you're like adding into your order the flexibility to allow a paying parent to choose the way they wanted to pay. They don't want the stigma with their employer. They want to pay straight out of their bank. Great. We would love to have it that way. Probably easier to keep track of your bank account than it is your employment because you're moving around too many employers too often. So it's just understanding where you have to kind of change your process to put the flexibility in. And those are just a couple examples that kind of come to mind, but that there are definitely others where the opportunity is there. You just have to be willing to make the changes to implement them.
And are those, do you find that in these conversations, and I mean, I've heard you at NCCSD and other places, so I know people, you know, have been talking about this, but do you find that is it a policy, like, legal issue, or do you find that it's somewhat cultural too? It's just like how we feel like we bring worth as like a caseworker in a child support agency, like how we bring worth. Is it more of a cultural mind shift, or is that part of kind of
this? I would add one more. There's a financial component to these, right? Kicking off an enforcement action is much cheaper than engaging with that parent and trying to get them employment and working with them to get a resume and set them up or refer them to the right place to get the support and assistance they need to be successful. That takes more time. It takes more money. That's where I want our caseworkers to be spending more time, is being supportive of the paying parent and helping them be successful than just hitting them over the head with enforcement actions, expecting them to suddenly become successful in paying their child support. Rarely is that actually the thing that gets them successful in paying child support. So part of it's money. A little bit of it is legal. Sometimes there are like laws and restrictions that limit our flexibility on handling certain things. So certainly that can be a piece. And then yes, the culture of child support has historically been as an enforcement agency. I do enforcement. I kick, if someone's not paying, I kick off the following enforcement actions on the case. And it does require kind of that change to say, no, enforcement should be my last resort as a caseworker. I should be doing a bunch of other supportive things before I get to enforcement. I think the challenge in the child support program is that we haven't been given a full tool belt of supportive activities that we can do with a participant. Yeah. A lot of times we have to do everything through referral and referring people to other organizations to take care of our constituents is a big black hole. They don't make it over to the other agency, or the other agency doesn't prioritize them like we're prioritizing them. And so we need some of the changes that Commissioner Gray is talking about on employment and parenting time orders and expungement services and getting a cell phone if they don't have a cell phone. What's their housing look like? It's very hard to pay child support if you can't even identify where you're going to be living tonight. Child support's not the number one priority. So to the extent that we can shore up our resources for our workers to be able to engage with those kind of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the lowest base funds or requirements to be successful, those things need to be resolved before you can get them up to the top of the pyramid where they're paying their child support and helping out the family as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and one thing that you mentioned that kind of triggered something for me that we've been kind of talking about around the country too, is it kind of starts with how we hire as an agency and what skills we're looking at. You know, some places feel like they're hiring, you know, they're advertising, the positions are called enforcement officers or enforcement specialist, or, and then when they get in the job, we've hired for this certain skill set, but now we're asking them to kind of like case manage and not mediate, but, you know, negotiate and work with parties and call parents. And some of that feels like a little bit of a conflict for the skill type that we're like actually even like starting with.
I do think that's kind of horizon activities. The next on the list is to, instead of hiring a child support caseworker or a child support specialist, you're hiring an employment specialist. It might be a contract with your workforce development agency with them, and you're actually giving them the money to hire a workforce person that sits with you full time and works on your caseload. Or it might be your own employee that you're hiring, and you get the training and resources from that work source entity. But it's an employment specialist in our office. It might be counselors to kind of talk through co-parenting and how to make them successful in communication. It might be a family law facilitator or a self-help attorney that is traditionally over in the courts, but you give them either through a contract or you hire your own to help them with parenting time orders and those things to be successful. And then you reserve over here a small contingent of staff that, all right, all the supportive stuff doesn't work. Let's try the enforcement stuff and send it over and put it in the enforcement pile. And then, I mean, I have the fortune of being in a state with a more modern system. Almost all of our enforcement actions are automated in California. So they just occur. What our enforcement caseworkers actually do is handle the repercussions of those enforcement actions. In an automated way, we took away their driver's license. The person comes in complaining about the driver's license takeaway, then the caseworker talks with them and works with them to get their driver's license back. So they're just dealing with the repercussions of enforcement actions done in the system. They don't get their passport because we've blocked their passport. They didn't get their IRS tax refunds, or we intercepted the lottery, or the mortgage companies are talking to us about the sale of their house and we want our piece of the child support. So the caseworkers are responding or reacting to what we did in an automated fashion, but they don't typically kick off the enforcement actions very much at the caseworker level in California, at least. I'm sure that's pretty similar in other states.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Well, so another area that kind of, I feel like it's touches on all of this that you've been talking about is the performance measures. And I don't know if, you know, every office has like their own internal like county or agency level, and then, you know, the state level and the federal performance measures. And I don't know exactly which performance measures I'm talking about, but it feels like if we're going to provide these services in a different way, maybe we're going to prioritize things differently, we need to be looking at what we're measuring. And I don't know if you have any thoughts about that, or
I don't think that my thought process of self-service or flexible case management really negatively impacts the federal performance measures all that much. It's hard to say that because I didn't take this enforcement action, this person isn't paying. I think the supportive things are going to encourage more people to pay their child support than the enforcement ever has. So the idea of doing those, providing opportunities for those helpful things, I think is going to be more valuable. Rarely are the instances where a person was capable of paying child support, but just unwilling to pay child support. And because I did this enforcement action, they're now going to pay their child support. Those are so few, so mm-hmm. few of our cases. The majority of our cases are, I would love to pay child support. I just can't pay child support because I don't have a job, or I don't make enough, or I don't even have a place to live, or I don't have a car to get to work or something like that. They would do it. They would meet their obligation if they could, but they need help. And we're not well situated to provide that kind of help. So that's the space I want us to be in, with supportive services and this flexible case management idea down the road.
Yeah. And I'm not necessarily like saying get rid of the federal performance measures, but I do think there's this level of like measuring, and I don't know how to do it, but I've just been thinking about like how, if we want caseworkers to spend more time and actually talk to people and do outreach and make people feel supported, like maybe there's some kind of measurement in there to kind of see if we're meeting the mark, if people are getting jobs and how do they feel about the child support department and those types of things. Because I agree with you, I think enforcement will go up, but I also think sometimes the way we measure performance for a caseworker is how many cases they touched in that day. And maybe, you know, automatically touching 50 cases is less impactful than actually like talking to 10 non-custodial parents, if that makes sense. Right.
Well, that's very true. I just think that if we're organizing our program, it's still important to get orders so that FBM is still good. It's still important to establish parentage so that FBM is still good. The supportive type services and the way that we might be able to redirect, the idea is that we should still be trying to collect more on these cases than we were before. I just think we'll get more collections through the supportive stuff than the enforcement stuff. So we need to ramp down on enforcement and ramp up on support, supportive services. And I think we'll still get the collections in the arrears. So those measures are still there. I think at jeopardy is it might be more costly to engage in a program that is more supportive than it is than what we do right now. Mm-hmm. So on that cost effectiveness for federal FPM, that might be an area where states will have to reevaluate what they're expecting from a cost effectiveness perspective. Mm-hmm. I hope it would be offset by increased collection.
Yeah. But I was going to ask you if any of those drawings from the Outreach Cafe what new and innovative ideas came out of that conversation? Because there looked like there were some really good ones on there.
Yeah, I think the key is around having a mobile app or a device that allows participants to take care of most of their child support functions themselves, updating their own demographics, Being aware of what their case qualifies for enforcement or not, being able to readily see the history of their payments and how things are coming in. The idea of allowing someone to, instead of just getting their payments in check or on a card, maybe it starts to get Venmo to them and they can update their information there. And then there's a concern. Maybe they don't have a phone to do this. Well, maybe child support should be participating in those services that actually give our participants a phone and internet access to balance out the playing field from a diversity, equity, inclusion perspective to make sure that they've got the tools to be successful. I can't imagine in this day and age trying to go through life without an internet-enabled phone, a smartphone that allows you to connect with all these different entities. So maybe that's kind of a bare minimum thing that child support should make sure that paying parents and receiving parents, for that matter, have a phone and internet to be able to access their case and other things that are happening. So all of these little things, the ability to schedule when the payment actually comes to child support instead of just on the first of the month. I would like my payments to come out on the 5th because I get paid on the 4th or something like that. Picking and choosing where, whenever possible, what's happening in managing their child support. And then someday and age, you know, that pie in the sky idea of being more in touch with not just financial on the child supports. Maybe it's shared services of some kind or agreements to, I pick up the kids after school every day from 3 to 5 instead of going to a babysitter. And that's worth a certain amount of my child support order. Some of those flexibilities to allow them to co-parent better and not just be about the dollars that I contribute to the family as the parent that's not traditionally in the house. Maybe those are the ways that we can really demonstrate that our true intent and our true value of our program is in a successful co-parenting environment for their child. That's what I want to see us spending our time and energy and really wrestling with tough issues there.
I love that. It reminds me of a really impactful case I had pretty early on when most of my cases were contempt, and it just was churning through all these contempts and all, you know, kind of felt like Groundhog Day, like day after day. And I remember there was a mom and she was upset that she wasn't getting child support. Dad came to court, was looking for a job, all of the things. And she said, if you could just pick up the kids after school while you're at least looking for a job, I could get rid of after school care, which is, I don't know, you know, hundreds of dollars a month. And that would alleviate some stress like tomorrow. And they made this agreement in court. And I had a thought of like, I wish we had thought of that. Like, you know, like, it was a great situation because now he gets to see his kids and she gets, you know, some immediate relief. And it was all just, you know, trying to facilitate a conversation out in the hall before we went into the court. So I think what you're saying is it makes a lot of sense.
That's exactly what we're talking about. I know San Francisco does really well with, is piloting this, is testing that out to see this activity or this thing that one parent is providing can equate to this portion of the child support order and supplement, not just with money, but with some of the other activities. You know, there are communities out there in child support that do this all the time. The reservations in particular, American Indian community, they've been doing this for years and years and years and have seen a lot of success in that. We just haven't translated that into kind of our mainstream systems.
So on this graph, it says technology that supports self-service. And do you think the state of California is there technology-wise or the, I mean, not to ask you to speak for the whole country, but thoughts on either of those?
The systems aren't there. I think some of this next iteration of systems that come on board that states transition to will likely have much more of this in place. We're supplementing this with ways of getting information out. There are over 1,000 forms in our CSE system in California. And they're forms like, when is your child emancipating so that we know when to stop collecting child support? That's a form. We print it out. We send it to the parent. They read their mail and they fill it out and they return it back to us. And instead of having a form, what we need is a workflow that I can text out and say, we need to make sure that we have updated information on your emancipation date for your child, when they finish school, so that we know when to stop things. And then they click on a link and it has three fields on this form, and then they hit submit and they send the information back to us. We didn't need their signature. We didn't need a form. And instead, we're getting the information back in like 5 minutes. It's just a self-service thing. And better than that would be to have an app that just allows them to go in and update when is your child school end as related to the birthday. It's just creating the opportunity, and a task that would normally come to a caseworker should probably go to the parent. We need you to update the emancipation date of your child, or the date the child is graduating from college or high school. And kind of updating those fields right in the app themselves. And the apps aren't there. Our ability to give all of those fields and send tasks and things to a parent is not there across the entire nation on wholesale. Maybe in limited circumstances that's available. I know we have a way to log into a web portal, and we're starting to make forms available online so that they don't get it all in mail. And there are certain fields that they can update and give us some feedback on, oh, my address changed or such changed, things like that. But in general, most of the tasks that we receive as caseworkers to get updated information or engage with our participants, I'd like to see go straight to the participants and just have them kind of manage that like you do your banking on a mobile app. So, no, the technology is not quite there yet, but even if the technology was there, I think it's still about our processes, our laws at state and federal level that really still need to be addressed to get us all the way to this more of a self-service, manage your own case, use the child support as the knowledge hub for instances when you're lacking. That's just fundamental changes, I think, that are more grounded in our policies, rules, and laws.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
One other thing you talked about, you have a lot of non-4D cases, and I don't know if you want to hit on this too, but I feel like the laws that you're talking about don't necessarily apply to them in some ways, but I feel like that's a group that perhaps has more flexibility and also might be the group that's more likely to take advantage of some of these self-service, particularly self-service options, but they're still on the cusp of, you know, becoming a 4D case, or maybe a lot of them, you know, needing other services. So what about that? I mean, is there a way to target that group of people as maybe your first wave?
Yes. So non-4D population is kind of a population we've used as a pulse on how well we are situated to provide self-service. We have in a variety of LCSAs and at the state in California engaged this population to ask, why aren't you using our services? Would you like to use our services? Is there and a whole bunch of different questions there. And they fall into several categories. I don't need your services because the person's paying and everything's good. I don't want to mess anything up. And I certainly don't want you doing a whole bunch of enforcement actions and papering us with all your child support stuff when we don't need it. When history and knowledge tells us that things are great right now, but in 5 years from now or something like that, situation may change. There might be a new partner into the one side or the other that changes the dynamic and suddenly the payments stop. Then you'll be asking us for help and we will be behind the gun at that point because you won't have an established case with us. Then there's the population that says, no, he's not paying, but I still don't want you to open up a case because I don't want you to do all these negative things to the person. Because I do have a good relationship with him and I realize he's struggling right now. This thing happened, that thing happened, and we're working through it. We communicate pretty well. And I just realize he can't do it right now. And I'm in a different place and I'm in a new relationship and I don't need the money as much. And there's a whole bunch of different reasons why they just don't want us to bring the full force of child support on them, because that's what we do every time someone signs on the dotted line. And then there's a third population that said, wait. You're not managing my case? I thought you were managing my case. What's going on here? Like, no, actually, you have a child support order, but you never actually opened up a child support case. And so, no, we are not tracking, addressing, or engaging at all on your case. Did you want us to? And in some instances, they'll move over. And then there's a few folks that are paying, were paying, but now they stopped paying. And so they immediately shifted over to be an enforcement a forcement case for us. They only want us in times of stress and failure to pay. But when things are paying, then they close their case again and they move it back to non-4D, and we're back out on the collection side of it. So they use us as a hammer when they want to get the person's attention. But as soon as they get the person's attention, they close their case afterwards. And they move it right back over to non-4D because they don't actually want to hassle with us.
Mm-hmm.
As a governmental entity. So they kind of fall into those general categories. And I'd like to just be able to have them in our caseload and just shut down all the enforcement and have them sit on the side. And if they need us, we can just quickly activate and move forward, instead of this game we're playing with opening and closing and going back and forth.
Yeah, that makes sense. So this whole podcast was about self-service and kind of the World Cafe, but is there anything else California is concentrating on that you can tell us about?
You know, I think all this sits on some foundation items, and full pass-through is that foundational item for me. It's hard for me to imagine self-service in an instance where we're still collecting on behalf of the government, because the government has said, we want you to do all these things to recoup our money. And once that's off the table, then it's really just about delivering our services in the best way possible to our parents. And so I kind of feel like we're not really going to be able to realize self-service until government gets its hand out of the pot and just allows us to be about the parents and the children. So that's pretty foundational to me, to make sure that's resolved and handling it. So that's the only other thing I would add to this participation, this whole conversation is really, there's a few foundational things that make us genuinely fully be about the parents. And mm-hmm. then it's from the moment they need our help, how easy is it to engage with our organization? How supportive are we? Do we come with the mindset of, we are a business and not a governmental entity, and our business exists on having participants want to use our services, not have to use our services because they get referred over. They're choosing to come to us because we provide a superior service and something of quality that they can't get somewhere else. We're pretty cheap, you know.
Yeah.
$35 a year is pretty good. You're not going to find that with any attorney, but yet people will choose to pay these big amounts of money because they're going to get better service from an attorney than us right now. At least that's what they're thinking in their mind. And we have to be able to demonstrate that we have a quality engagement process with our parents. And we're going to walk them through this super complicated, super emotional time in their life and help them be successful in it.
Yeah, I like how you frame that, because it does feel like when you start believing that that's where you are starting from, that the mind shift kind of has to follow, that you're not a service that they're required, you know, just that framing of it changes a lot of the mindset.
Our bottom line isn't profit, but our bottom line is people that want to use our services. Is that growing or is that declining? And if it's declining, why? Is it because we're not doing good services or people just don't need our help?
Mm-hmm.
I think that divorce rate and the out of birth wedlocks would indicate that our services are needed, mm-hmm. just not wanted because
right.
of what we deliver services.
What keeps David Kilgore up at night?
Actually, it's the fear of someone breaking into our system and stealing all of our data. And that's probably the biggest fear, honestly. So we're constantly talking about information security and confidentiality and protecting the data and things like that. On the plus side, I get excited about thinking about where we're going to be 10 years from now. And my mind can start spinning on that all night long. And then I just have to get up and come into my office and start writing stuff down and thinking. But I'm pretty excited in California. We have so many things going on right now that I really have to actually take a back seat and turn off my mind for a while, because we're at our eyeballs on implementing new projects and things like that. And we need some time to just get some of them done. Arrears pull pass through, uncollectible debt, changes to our guideline calculators and our processing of court orders. So we've got a lot underway right now, and I'm excited about every one of those changes, because I think those are all foundational to being this program that we aspire to be 5-10 years from now.
Thanks for being on and letting us pick your brain a little bit, and never stop being controversial, my friend.
I won't. You can count on that. Thanks.
Thanks again very much to David for being on the show with us today. And if you'd like to learn more about the topic, please check out the News from the Peak section on our website. And we'd love to hear from you and get your ideas and your feedback. And if you'd like to be a guest on the show, please reach out to us on the contact link on our website. News from the Peak is a project of Grace Peak Strategies and is produced by Maureen Life, David Ram, Robert Riddle, and me. You can learn more about us at gracepeakstrategies.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Grays Peak, and we're easy to find on Facebook and LinkedIn as well. This was News from the Peak. I'm Joe Mamlin. Thanks for joining us.
You get caught in the, what do you call them? The outtakes. Have you ever heard one of our podcasts? The best part of our podcast, because they're amazing. But at the end of the credits, Joe always finds like the funny outtakes and then you have to watch yourself. Someday we're going to do a whole episode of just outtakes and bloopers. And it's usually, I'm going to be honest, it's usually me cussing that needs to get edited out. I've been really good lately, though. I've been like cleaning up my potty mouth. And so, yeah, I'm proud of myself.
We all series of outtakes of you just cursing different.
Yeah, we'll have one episode that's just the cursing outtakes. And then another...
I'm cleaning it up, God damn it. Yeah, you guys did. You had a lot of stuff. And I was curious about this little thing right here. It looks like a hand grenade.
That's access to the internet.
Okay, that's way better than a hand grenade.
Yeah. Do you want to rephrase it or just go with that question?
You can just go with it. We'll make it work.
Yeah. Well, you skipped my last question, which is what gets you up in the morning? So you already answered it. So good job.
There we go.
We'll let you know when the podcast comes out and just be prepared for all the, you know, adoring fans, you know, break down your door and want autographs and stuff.
Well, you'll have whole new security concerns. Once
gotta tell you, like, it was a really hard day. Like, it was a long, I mean, they asked for 8 hours, but